Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Caring about your world, it's all about the truth. It's all about doing the next right and honorable thing. We're talking to James Corbett this hour, James Corbett of The Corbett Report. He is joining us today to discuss 9/11. If there's anybody who's done the most amazing thing on 9/11, it is James Corbett. And he's also done the unanswered questions of 9/11. And I really appreciate the fact that he has stayed with this issue. Though he's out of the country, he does it and he continues to stay on 9/11, which we all need to do. And by the way, if you're not familiar with the Corbett Report, it's a listener-supported alternative news source, open source intelligence. That's podcast, interviews, articles, videos, breaking news, and he does the real deal information. I'm just so glad to have him join us again on the Power Hour. Thank you so much, James Corbett, for joining us in the Power Hour today.
Well, thank you so much for having me here for this extremely important talk on this extremely important day about an extremely important subject that has been all too familiar, I think, to probably everyone in the listening audience for a long time now. And I'm glad that people like yourself are continuing to keep this conversation going and not letting that myth spread that this was the act of dastardly terrorists that hate us for our freedoms, or at least it only was so insofar as that describes the people who actually committed these attacks, who unfortunately were on the inside of the U.S. government that day.
I don't know why, but ever since you did that YouTube on 9/11, I just, you made so much sense. You have made it fall into place so well for so many people as I share that with them. And I just thank you for that, because you look at it like it really should be looked at. You know, what are we thinking here? Three buildings fell down and a plane vaporized, or two planes vaporized, depending on how you look at it, minus one piece. And yet we're supposed to believe that all these bad guys from some other country carried this off. Now, what do we know? What do we know to date that is real hard evidence on those that actually committed the crime? We know there's one guy at Guantanamo, KSM, who self-admitted that we have to put that in there, who won't shave his beard, so can't go to trial or whatever reason. I mean, what do we know about anybody that's been brought to justice for 9/11?
Well, we know that, for example, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the so-called mastermind who claimed to have masterminded the 9/11 attacks from A to Z, and that's apparently a direct quotation from this Al-Qaeda terrorist who likes to talk like a 1950s Hollywood gangster or something. But but we know that he was, in fact, waterboarded. I can't remember the exact number, but it was something like 183 times in 1 month in order to extract his confessions, which people should go back and read what he actually confessed to, because not only was it quite an incredible list of crimes that he was supposedly confessing to, but he also included some things on that list which he could not possibly have done, including attacks on buildings that never existed and attacks that took place after the time he was in custody. So we know that that confession was extracted through torture and was not worth the paper that it wasn't written on. And we know that the torture records and the records of the interrogations of numerous suspects related to 9/11, which formed the basis of the majority of the 9/11 Commission report, was similarly extracted through torture, which has been proven time and time again to make absolutely phony evidence and to get people to admit to things that they didn't do. So we know that it's been a tissue of lies. We know that the Osama bin Laden supposed confessions have been a tissue of lies straight through from the beginning, when he was in fact denying that he had anything to do with the attacks. But that changed in December of 2001, 2 months after the invasion of Afghanistan, when we're expected to believe that the U.S. military just stumbled upon, in all of Kabul, they just happened to stumble upon a videotape of Osama bin Laden confessing to the 9/11 attacks. The only problem with that videotape is that it was independently verified by a German news outlet about a year or two after the video was released, and they found that in all of the key parts of the Pentagon-issued transcript for that video, which claimed to have Osama bin Laden talking about his foreknowledge of the attacks, every single point at which he claimed to have foreknowledge or claimed to have any part in the 9/11 attacks was mistranslated, according to the German retranslation that they did with their own translators. So again, and then after that point, it just got into cartoon versions of Osama bin Laden appearing younger and younger each time he appeared through and more digital, as they just started to release these ridiculous fake videos in the build up to the great unraveling of the Osama bin Laden myth and eventually the dumping of his body at sea, or whatever we're expected to believe happened back a couple of years ago now. So it's been a tissue of lies. from the start. And any supposed links to Al-Qaeda are really just links to assets that have been planted that had been for months working on their quote-unquote legends. That's the intelligence speak for their backstories, the stories of who they were and what they were about. And they were trying to set this image of themselves as terrorists, the alleged hijackers. But we now know, for example, that they were busy snorting cocaine, going to strip clubs, living with pink-haired strippers and the like, just like good devout Muslim fundamentalists should. So, again, it's just a tissue of lies from start to finish. And in order to find out who really was responsible for the attacks, we have to look, like any criminal investigation, at the means, motive, and opportunity.
It is unbelievable, the story that we have been sold over and over again for this last 12 years. It's unbelievable. And the further the story goes, the stupider it gets, really. Now, didn't we not too long ago have the story that, well, they didn't really bury him at sea, and that was turned out to not be accurate also?
Well, actually, it was interesting. As part of the hack of Stratfor, the private intelligence company based out of Austin, one of the documents that was leaked was an email from one of the executives at Stratfor to one of his contacts, in which they were saying that the body of Osama bin Laden was being flown back to the United States, and that the burial at sea thing was just a ruse that was being given to the public. And that was an interesting little tidbit from that hack. But ultimately, I think that still is probably just misinformation, because there still has not been anything approaching evidence that Osama bin Laden was living in Abbottabad, or that was him who was supposedly taken down in this raid. In fact, numerous people who lived in the area who were interviewed in the hours and days following the attack said that they had been to that near that residence for months and months, and they said it was completely impossible. Abbottabad being basically the Pakistani equivalent of West Point or something like this. I mean, and it was a very locked down area where people would not move into the area without extensive background checks. So the idea that Osama bin Laden was there for however many years evading the most sophisticated dragnet in the history of the planet is laughable at best. I mean, it would be laughable if it wasn't such a horrific thing that we're expected to not only believe this, but then to buy into all of the war propaganda that has been fueled on these lies and all of the blood that's been spilled because of these lies. It's really a terrible and horrific thing that the world has been misled about for far too long now.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And I wonder how many of the 9/11 families have figured it out. You know, I always wonder that whenever we're given another one of these phony stories of, you know, well, we buried him at sea because that's the traditional Muslim tradition. Yeah, right. And we sent the SEALs over there, but every one of their cameras failed in their hats that they were doing. And oh my gosh, so we didn't get any pictures. But we do have a cartoon here that we did for you. So, I mean, the families have got to catch on to this. I mean, you don't have to be more than about sixth grade education. And some even before sixth grade can figure this out.
That's exactly right. And the good thing is that so many of them have figured this out. In fact, if you go to a website called patriotsquestion911.com, that's all one word, patriotsquestion911.com, they have an extensive list of testimonials from various people who have questioned the official 9/11 fable, fairy tale. And that includes 300 plus 9/11 survivors and victims' family members. So there is a large and growing list, growing all the time, of people who do question these attacks. And of course, it must be kept in mind that the 9/11 Commission itself, as much of a whitewash as it was, wasn't even going to take place at all. It was never going to happen. In fact, Bush asked the Congress to basically sweep this under the rug and to put it to bed as quickly as possible. But he was forced politically, basically, to start a commission of inquiry because of the tireless efforts of a few of those victims' family members, the Jersey girls, who basically shamed the administration into starting an inquiry, which unfortunately did turn into a cover-up. And the majority of the victims' family members' questions, the the questions that were compiled by victims' family members to be put to the commission were either never answered or not answered sufficiently. But that just goes to show that, unfortunately, it's never been about finding truth. It's never been about justice. And if any more evidence of that was needed, we only have to look at the way that the 9/11 first responders have been treated like human garbage and left to die by an administration, not only the Bush administration, but then the Obama administration, who truly doesn't care about the people who really did heroically sacrifice their lives and put their lives at risk in order to save others on that day.
What is the number one question? If anybody asks you, all right, you know, if they come up to you or you're talking about 9/11 and they say, okay, smart guy, since you're so smart and you've looked at this and you know so much about 9/11, what's the number one issue that you take, that you have a problem with in 9/11? What would be the one thing that you would say, here is almost like proof positive 9/11 didn't happen the way they said it did?
That's an excellent question, because it is so difficult to answer. And maybe that's just because I've been looking at this for several years now, and I've really immersed myself in so much of this literature on 9/11 and all of the information and research that's come out. So it's kind of hard to see the forest for the trees at this point. I've seen so many of the trees that it's difficult to see the bigger picture and see what relates to people.
They put out a lot of trees for us, haven't they?
There have been so many trees, it's almost impossible to calculate them all. And unfortunately, this is just one of those aspects of black operations, intelligence operations. There's always so many different distractions that are put out there for people to go down blind alleys. But I have to say, one of the most fascinating aspects of the 9/11 story, and one that hasn't really been given a lot of attention, is about a company called P-TECH, which had some very interesting connections and a very interesting role to play, at least potentially, in what happened on 9/11 that hasn't been given
a
lot of thought.
When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about P-TECH, and I want to talk about those stocks and what happened to United and American Airlines stock from someone who knows the financial business. We're going to be back. TheCorbettReport.com. We'll be back. 4 minutes. This is Joyce Riley. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Caring about your world, doing the next right and honorable thing. The next right and honorable thing is honoring those that truly died at 9/11, bringing attention, bringing the light to those who are involved, and the fact that the story is so unbelievable, so nonsensical. We're not being disrespectful at all. We are calling your attention to how this could not have happened the way they said it did. Joining us today is James Corbett of the Corbett Report and of the International Forecaster. And we're going to be talking more about the financial situation a little bit later, but we have his broad research on 9/11. And by the way, we also are going to offer 9/11 in plain sight and ripple effect. And Rosie's going to put together some kind of really good special for you on that, because I really would like to get it out there simply because it needs to be seen. It is excellent, and it needs to be seen, and it raises the questions that need to be asked also. And then we're going to be talking to Massimo Mazzucco in the next hour also about his 5-hour DVD he just did. We're talking to James Corbett today of the Corbett Report. And James, you mentioned P-TECH before the break. Why is this company important? What should we know about it in relation to 9/11?
Well, this was a company that was based out of Massachusetts and started up in the 1990s that was running a type of software that was basically software that could predict the future, not exactly like a crystal ball, but it was risk management software that was designed to give organizations, large-scale organizations with multiple different branches in different cities or countries with thousands of personnel and different operations, trying to give a kind of bird's-eye view of the entire organization and how different things can manifest within that organization, so that large-scale institutional clients like banks and that type of thing that have these incredibly large organizations that are prone to things like insider trading and attacks of various kinds trying to steal their money would be able to basically scan the entire system and not only look for that type of anomalous activity as it's happening, but even be able to predict it from various things that were happening within that organization. So they were selling that type of software. And interestingly enough, I mean, their clients included basically a who's who of Washington and the big government agencies, including the White House and the Secret Service and the FAA and the Pentagon and various other branches of the U.S. government, behemoth. And long story short, basically there was a researcher who came across this in the wake of 9/11, who started to inquire into this company that was behind this software and what they were really doing. And eventually the investigation led to the discovery that they were running interoperability tests on the software between the FAA and NORAD on the morning of 9/11, set up in the basement of the Pentagon with the back doors to the computer systems, which controlled, for example, the radar systems and the intercepts and all of the things that were happening there. So it would have literally been possible for someone with access to that computer system to have been manipulating those radar readings in any way they wanted on that morning. And this is, I mean, a startling, startling piece of the tale that I went over in one of the previous episodes of my podcast that I think is really interesting, especially because eventually the trail of this company leads back to someone who was placed on the internationally designated terrorist list in the wake of 9/11, called Yasin al-Qadi. And since there have been unsealed FBI indictments against some of the PTAC executives for lying to the federal government about their operations, et cetera, et cetera. But they were investigated briefly in the wake of 9/11, a couple of years after the fact, and then immediately cleared of any suspicion by the Department of Justice, which is was a pretty interesting part of that puzzle. But basically, yes, this was a company that had the back door to the most sensitive software in the most sensitive government agencies in the United States, and they were operating there in the basement of the Pentagon on 9/11.
That 9/11 and the Pentagon and the area that was hit, the plane that hit the portion of the Pentagon that was not being used at the time, how convenient. I mean, it seems like all the cards were stacked perfectly for the least amount of people to have been injured and the most visible damage perhaps to have been done.
Well, it's even worse than that, because it wasn't completely abandoned, that section of the Pentagon. It had recently undergone some upgrades, specifically blast upgrades to try to reinforce some of the walls, which is kind of interesting given what happened that day. But in fact, there were some people in some of the offices, including a budget analyst office. There was people who were in the Pentagon working on records, including presumably records related to the $2.3 trillion that Rumsfeld had announced missing from the Pentagon's coffers in the months leading up to 9/11.
Ooh, that's right. Just happened to bring that up and oops, never heard about that again. $2.3 trillion. Are you kidding me? We'll be back. 3-minute break with the Power Hour. James Corbett, The Corbett Report. We'll be back. Stay tuned. Thank you for joining us, caring about your world. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Please support the Power Mall. I need to tell you that we're having some challenges this week. I've been telling you that at the Power Mall. We got some people that are really, really sick, and we ask your prayers for that. Really got some serious situations. And please don't call and ask what's going on, or please don't call and ask where your order is, because if you ordered a week ago and you haven't gotten it yet, just hang on. We're doing the best we can. We do have some challenges, and we just ask for you to be as patient as you possibly can and eliminate as many phone calls as possible today. I've been asking you this week, and it's just been overwhelming phone calls, so please don't call. We really, really do need, we just need your prayers for right now. So I just ask that. And we do have some specials on that we would like for you to order. And of course, when you order from the Power Mall, we give you the best products that we possibly can. We encourage you to buy from each other. Don't buy from the good guys. Don't buy from the bad guys. Don't buy from the people that create these international corporate problems for us, tragedies and illnesses. Buy from the good guys. And we've got a lot of things at the Power Mall that are on special. You can call at 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. And we're going to have a special for you on both the ripple effect and 9/11 in plain sight. And we encourage you to get that from the Power Mall, and also Massimo Mazzucco's DVD that we'll talk about in the next hour with him. Joining us this hour is James Corbett, thecorbettreport.com. We're so thrilled and honored to have him join us on 9/11 because he makes more sense out of the nonsense, or he makes more nonsense out of the sense. I don't know which it is, because we haven't really heard anything that is real fact. You were talking about the company called PTAC and then taking the Pentagon and making that area stronger that was hit at that time, which obviously all these things are by design. The $2.3 trillion that just came up, was it 2.3 trillion or billion?
That's trillion with a T, which was double the size of the entire federal budget for that same year.
There was as much as the entire federal budget
double the
missing.
Entire federal budget. Yes, missing from the Pentagon's coffers in the years preceding that had been reported just months prior to 9/11. And in fact, that number rose to $3.5 trillion in the years afterwards. And it was directly questioned in Congress by Cynthia McKinney, who was the congresswoman at that time, directly questioned Donald Rumsfeld on this in some very dramatic testimony for a defense appropriations hearing back in, I believe, in 2004 or 2005 that you can find online. And I suggest people watch that because it's quite telling to watch the way that Rumsfeld forgets what the question is even before he has a chance to answer it. So so there you go. That's apparently what $3.5 trillion is worth to someone like Rumsfeld.
Absolutely unbelievable that we would buy into this or allow this to go by or allow them not to have some type of law enforcement investigation. I mean, we don't need any more senatorial or congressional hearings. Those are slap on the hands that work for them. We need to know who is guilty of crimes that need to be put in prison for the rest of their natural lives.
We certainly do. And I think that that has to be the ultimate aim of 9/11 truth at this point, because as we stand here, it is now 12 years since the attacks themselves. And with each passing year, we get 1 year further away from the idea of actually seeing any of these perpetrators really brought to justice. And that's a sad thought, because unfortunately, the obvious parallel is something like the JFK assassination investigation, where the vast majority of the public knows it was not Oswald acting alone that killed Kennedy. But after 50 years now of investigation, really, what has that brought about politically? I mean, the closest that we ever got to seeing anything approaching justice for what happened to JFK was the Jim Garrison investigation, which was immediately undermined, infiltrated, and derailed by the FBI and CIA, as is now documented and on the record. So again, unfortunately, with each passing year, we get further away from the idea of actually seeing any of these perpetrators put in shackles and put in orange jumpsuits and locked away for the rest of their lives as they deserve to be.
It is incredible. What is anything, if you were to look at anything, what does make sense? What do we know for absolute? Okay. Do we know, I mean, I know this is cussed and discussed back and forth amongst a lot of people. Do we know that two planes hit the World Trade Center?
Yes, we do know that. We do know that there were planes involved in 9/11. There's been a lot of talk from people who believe there were no planes, and this is just another one of those disinformation types of tactics, one of those trees that are put out there as a way of trying to distract people from what the real issues are and to get people fighting with each other within the movement itself. So again, there will be a lot of that type of talking about planes, talking about the collapse of the buildings as well. There's always people who are trying to make that into a point of contention, and there are different little groups that fight with each other over specifically how the buildings were brought down. I think that the vastly more important thing is to be looking at the actual criminals that we can point to as the key suspects in the 9/11 case, who we could actually take to court and start prosecuting tomorrow if there was a prosecutor and a judge willing to hear the case. And that's, I think, the real point of what we can actually grasp when it comes to the 9/11 investigation. And there are all sorts of people with all sorts of different motives for the 9/11 attacks. I don't think they took place for any one particular reason. I think it was a convergence of many different people with different aspirations that all came together at that point. And I think that's, again, something like the JFK assassination, again, didn't happen for one particular reason. It happened because a number of different, very influential people had their own reasons for wanting to see JFK out of the way. Well, a lot of people had different reasons for wanting to see a terror attack happen that they could blame on Al-Qaeda and then invade Afghanistan. There were people who had monetary motives, all sorts of different monetary motives. There were people who, as we alluded to earlier, put short options on various stocks related to 9/11 that ended up earning money in the wakes of those attacks. We saw, for example, the vaults underneath the World Trade Center complex being raided and gold being taken out of them, as well as other materials, treasuries.
Okay, we do know that the gold was raided. That is a definite absolute.
We do, and in fact, there was one truck that was recovered in one of the tunnels that was leading out of the World Trade Center complex that got trapped, and there was gold discovered in that truck. So again, there's details about this online, but again, these types of things don't get nearly as much play as the details of the collapse and the whether there were planes and issues like that. So I think that's to the detriment of 9/11 truth. And another extremely important part of this puzzle that I hope people know about, I hope it becomes more widespread knowledge, not only that there was a group called the Project for the New American Century, PNAC, which consisted of Richard Armitage and Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and all these high-ranking neocons that talked about needing a new Pearl Harbor to justify basically invading the rest of the world and maintaining American imperial hegemony for the 21st century. But there was, in fact, the invasion plans for Afghanistan were drawn up, and it was the first major national security directive of the Bush administration. It was called NSPD-9, and it included the entire battle plan for Afghanistan, the invasion plan, logistics, command and control, air and ground defense forces. All of that was planned and put on the president's desk, waiting to be signed on September 4th, 2001. And again, we know that for a fact. That is not contested or disputed. The invasion plans for Afghanistan were on President Bush's desk on September 4th. And lo and behold, 1 week later, the reason to invade came along. And the next month, they enacted that very plan, NSPD-9, and the U.S. was at war.
All right. What else do we know? Do we know that a plane crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania?
We do not. In fact, the majority of the evidence seems to indicate that it was shot down. And I think that is something that has been they've tried to go with this let's roll type of heroic, the passengers brought the plane down story as a feel-good story. But I think they've always kept the idea of it being a shoot-down in their back pocket to say, well, actually, no, but we had to rally the country around it. I think that's the type of thing that they could reveal 30 or 50 years from now, and everyone would go, well, you know, they had to do that kind of thing. But I think that the majority of the physical evidence indicates that plane was shot out of the sky.
Now that's critical. That is a huge critical issue. The very fact that TWA Flight 800, they found big pieces of it, even the shuttle, remember when the shuttle Columbia crashed? They found big pieces of that. But we're supposed to believe that because, I don't know the reason, but because of some unknown reason, we can't find any pieces. I even heard him yesterday talking about this on Fox saying, remember Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where a plane crashed and nothing was found? It's like nothing was found is supposed to be okay for us to accept.
Except for the fact that it's never been duplicated in any other plane crash anywhere on the planet at any time.
Right.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why, plus the debris field being scattered over a period of an area of miles, indicates that this was something that it broke apart in midair and was scattered over a very wide area, which is why there was not much at the actual quote-unquote crash scene itself. This is exactly, I mean, exactly the point. There are so many different events like this that can only be pointed to as 9/11, and that's the only time in history where this has ever happened, but now we're expected to believe it's just part of the official record, therefore it's a precedent that we can point to. So apparently now, controlled demolition companies, they don't have to actually, you know, spend months wiring up buildings and planning and plotting to make sure that the building falls just right. Apparently they can just set a few scattered office fires and wait for the entire building to collapse in a matter of hours. Except for the fact that they don't do that, but again, we're expected to believe that's precisely what happened on 9/11.
That's right. I'd like to open up the phone lines. For those of you who have an educated question, not just, well, what really happened then? You know, I mean, there's all kinds of speculations. But if you have a real question regarding something about 9/11, give us a call at 855-995-6923. If you'd like to talk to James Corbett, 855-995-6923. All right. The shorting of the stock with American United Airlines. Explain what that means to the listeners and how that would take place and how unthinkable that kind of a situation was.
Basically, when you short a stock, you are more or less making a bet that the value of that stock is going to decline in the future. And basically, it's a type of bet where you're going to buy it back at a future date for presumably a lower price than what you sold it for. And so this is just a kind of a complicated transaction that's actually fairly basic. It is just a bet that the price of the value of a stock is going to decline over some period of time. And there was a lot of reporting going on, even in the mainstream press in the months following 9/11, that in fact there was an unusual number of shorts, of put options on various stocks related to the 9/11 attacks in the weeks prior to the attacks themselves. This is usually reported as American Airlines and United Airlines, but in fact there were other companies that were part of this as well, including some of the tenants of the World Trade Center, including notably Marsh & McLennan, which was one of the world's largest risk management and insurance brokerages that happened to be in the very floors that were struck by the plane on 9/11. So this was something that was reported on. It launched the most massive investigation in SEC history. And there was sort of an international manhunt going on for who placed these put options and why they were placed. And it had a very, I suppose, an unfulfilling denouement. So a lot of people don't really know what happened with this story. It just kind of faded away eventually. But the official version of the story is that the SEC found out that, yes, there were these anomalous amounts of put option activity in the stock market leading up to the attacks. But ultimately, the trades sourced back to individuals and investors who had no conceivable ties to Al-Qaeda and thus could not have been guilty of trading on inside information. So the investigation was officially scrapped. And then in 2010, it was revealed through some FOIA requests that the SEC has now destroyed the records that respond to the 9/11 insider trading investigation as part of apparently their routine record keeping. They destroyed the records. So we will never know exactly what they discovered or how they discovered it. But we do know that the 9/11 Commission report ended up saying that the actual funding of the attacks themselves, the follow the money part of the famous follow the money dictum of any criminal investigation, is of, quote, little practical significance. And that's a direct quotation from the 9/11 Commission report. So apparently we're now expected to believe that it doesn't really matter how these attacks were funded, the money trail, none of that really matters. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. There's nothing to see there. So again, just another ridiculous aspect of this entire story.
Oh, Mr. Silverstein might be one of those many men behind the curtain, but he certainly did well. We talked about that earlier, how well he did after that whole debacle. Let me go to Annette in West Virginia. Annette, quickly. Go ahead, please. Question for Mr. Corbett.
Well, Mr. Corbett, did you hear that Mr. Cheney was in the basement at the time? I believe American Free Press had published that a while back, and that also, actually, I was there. And by the grace of God, my life was saved because I did not keep an appointment with Rod Coppola to meet at the restaurant that morning of 9/11. And I was in New York City, and I was supposed to be right at the next day on 9/11.
Okay, and then
restaurant.
Cheney was in the basement where? Cheney was in what basement?
Well, that's what I'm trying to find out. If you would check with American Free Press,
I can talk about where Cheney actually...
Okay, Annette, I don't know that that's relevant or even important, but let me go to Mr. Corbett then.
It turns out that is an important part of the official story. In fact, one of the things it reveals is that in the wake of the second plane hitting the second tower, Dick Cheney was apparently not only taken and removed by Secret Service from his office, but he was physically picked up and carried, which could not have been an easy task given his ample girth, but physically picked up and moved out of his office and down to a secure location in the bowels of the White House. As opposed to the, President Bush, who was at a public engagement that was publicly announced, and the public knew where he was, and he was sitting there as a sitting duck, basically, not being moved, not being in any way protected by his Secret Service agents, who let him stay there for another half hour before he eventually moved. But Cheney ultimately ended up in something called the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, the PEOC, which is very interesting because, according to the official story, he arrived at 9:58, which is after the plane hit the Flight 77 hit the Pentagon, and thus he had no possibility of being involved in any of the conversations taking place about Flight 77 approaching the Pentagon. But there was another person at the PEOC that day, the transportation minister, transportation secretary, Norman Mineta, who testified that Cheney arrived at 9:20 before Flight 77 hit the Pentagon, and in Mineta's testimony, Cheney was having a conversation with one of his aides about that plane coming into the Pentagon. They were talking about it. It's 20 miles out. It's 15 miles out. It's 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand? Cheney said, yes, the orders still stand. Did you hear anything to the contrary? And the plane hit the building. The implication being that the order was not to shoot that plane down.
Unbelievable. Thank you very much for that, Annette. We'll be back. Robert in Canada, you'll be up next with James Corbett. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this 3-minute break. Welcome back to the Power Hour, ladies and gentlemen. That's a song you can spread around, pass around, let people hear it. Let them listen to this interview with James Corbett today. And then ask them, make sense of all this for us, please. Please have them listen to the James Corbett interview. You can get the email blast, go to thepowerhour.com, sign up for the email blast, and you'll have it there to share with lots of other people. And they do need to hear this. He is making more sense than anyone. Think about it, listeners. How much do we really know that is an absolute of what happened on 9/11? How much do we really know? Let's go to Robert in Canada. Robert in Canada, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
James, I'm wondering if you could speak to the broader question of the targeting and destruction of financial records apart from the Naval Accounting Office.
Certainly. What aspect of that would you like me to talk about?
Well, I thought that there were investigations going on to some of the large financial scandals, Enron and so on, that as an example.
That's right. Yes, there were Enron records related to the Enron investigation and numerous other large-scale Wall Street frauds and other types of fraud activities that were being housed in World Trade Center Building 7, as I believe there was an IRS office in World Trade Center 7 that was housing some of those records. In fact, World Trade Center Center 7 was a kind of who's who of governmental agencies, including the largest CIA office outside of Virginia. So it was a kind of intelligence hub. And one of the things that they were housing was the records related to the Enron investigation, which went down with Building 7 that day.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you very much for the phone call. Let's go to Frank in North Carolina. Frank, you're on the air with James Corbett. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I can report so far, and I'm probably going to be able to report by tomorrow morning, that no one is talking about on the mainstream neocon news talk radio shows what happened, what really happened. No one's questioning what happened on 9/11, and no one will. It's being totally ignored.
Ignored? Let's get to the point. What's being ignored?
That 9/11 was not what they said it was. The American people are not doing their job. The people out there are not calling into radio shows and voicing their protest call. But I would like to know, perhaps it's a matter of efficacy, but no one ever seems to talk about the groups of Israelis that were arrested in and around New York City on 9/11. And I don't understand that, because if it was any other group of people, if in the world from any other country, it would be household knowledge. And I was wondering, too, how does Urban, U-R-B-A-N, Urban Moving Systems play into all this? And a lot of these guys were arrested.
Okay, Urban Moving Systems. We'll deal with that after the break. And then we're going to talk about what the Corbett Report is and how you can become a lot more knowledgeable by being involved with the Corbett Report. We'll be back after this 1 minute, 10 second break. That's all we're going to be gone. Straight up top of the hour, you're in the right place. I want to remind you, we're going to have a special announcement in the second hour on Friday. Please be attuned to that, because I don't want to do it again. We're only going to do it once. And if you can, listen on Friday. Otherwise, listen to the replay in the second hour of the Power Hour on Friday. Let's go back to the question on the table. Urban Moving Systems. Does that mean anything to you, James Corbett?
Well, this is the question about the so-called dancing Israelis who were seen high-fiving and cheering as the planes were hitting the Trade Center, or at least in the wake of that, by an eyewitness who called that into the police, who then went out to investigate this idea. And in fact, there were people arrested on that morning, including these five Israelis, who were later released and went back to Israel, appeared on an Israeli talk show, and talked about how they were there to document the event, which means that they obviously had some sort of foreknowledge about what was going to be happening that morning. This relates into all of the reports of white vans that were being stopped with bombs and explosives that morning that were suddenly memory-holed after those reports had been broadcast on CBS and other outlets, but suddenly that didn't seem to fit in with the rest of the 9/11 story, so those reports were sunk into the memory hole. But that really only scrapes the beginning of the story. In fact, there was even a Fox News series by Carl Cameron investigating Israeli spying in the lead up to 9/11 and how that might have played a role in the 9/11 attacks. That series was suddenly canceled halfway through before they had a chance to finish reporting on what they found out. And Carl Cameron has never spoken out about that again, as far as I know. And there's a lot of other connections. There's a couple of documentaries I would recommend to people who are interested in this aspect of it. There's one called War by Deception by a person called Ryan Dawson, who's here in Japan as well, actually. And that's up on YouTube, War by Deception. There's another documentary, Fabled Enemies by Jason Burmes, goes into a lot of the Israeli connections to what happened on 9/11. And I think it's quite obvious that Israel had an obvious interest in seeing war being waged on Iraq specifically, and that's part of this project for the New American Century that I was talking about that included a lot of people who are on the record admitted Zionists, and in fact people like Douglas Faith and Paul Wolfowitz, who have even been investigated by the FBI for spying for Israel in the past. So I think some of the motives for the geopolitical motives of what happened on that day are quite transparent.
Oh, that's interesting. Thank you very much for the phone call, Frank in North Carolina. Now, the Corbett Report. You can sign up for and subscribe to the Corbett Report. Go to the Corbett or CorbettReport.com. Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com, where there's a Corbett Report podcast. radio, videos, interviews, and articles that you can support James Corbett in doing, because we need people like him out there. I cannot tell you how valuable this is to keep the issue going, because you get the straight story from him. You don't get any extra information. You don't get anything agendized. You get the real deal information. And what will people learn, or what will they be able to do as a result of subscribing to the Corbett Report?
Well, the first thing that I ask people to do is to explore my website itself. So take a look through the archives. There's thousands of hours of audio and video media there that's completely freely available for download. So I invite people to explore that first. And if they find something of value in there, if they actually get something out of the podcasts and videos and interviews and articles, then if they want to support that work, they can subscribe. And basically, once you subscribe, you will be sent a newsletter once a week that includes not only my International Forecaster editorial, but also some recommended reading and viewing. And once a month, this subscriber-only video is all part of my subscriber newsletter. So that's the benefit for subscribing. But really, I mean, at the end of the day, it's about supporting myself and my work. So first of all, familiarize yourself with my website. And if you think it's a valuable resource, then you can support it.
I like your attitude. I wish we could talk about Fukushima. I wish we could talk about the gold market, the silver market, and all those things. But unfortunately, we can't. And Apple, by the way, is almost down 25 points today. They're not doing very well over their announcement yesterday on the two new iPhones. But that's neither here nor there. We're out of time. I have enjoyed this immensely. I thank you very much for your incredible research. Please stay with it, and please come back on the Power Hour soon so we can discuss more about Fukushima and also the markets. Thank you so much, James Corbett.
Anytime you need me, Joyce. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're awesome. You are awesome. Thank you so very much. Everybody, we'll be back after this 3-minute break. Massimo Mazzucco, get ready.